today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey guys, I wrote a poem about a Beatles song.
Oh really? That's cool, Patty. Do you want to read it?
Well, I'm a little shy about my poetry, but I'll read a little bit. The sky is blue, it's beautiful, and so are you, dear Susie.
Talking the Beatles all this week, and Patrick, I think I heard you mention that we had something like 17, 18 contributors to this countdown that we're doing this week.
And yeah,
how many songs?
So we had a total of 77 different songs that got voted. So
that's at least one vote.
Yeah, at least one vote.
And we used some painstaking effort to compile this all into a top 15 that we're counting down this week. So it's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us all this week is...
Brad Mailer.
Thank you, Brad, for coming over.
Thanks for having me.
And mouth not working right now. and yesterday we started the countdown with numbers 15 through 13.
That's correct.
And so today we're going to pick up at number 12. She said, I know what it's like to be dead. I know what it is to be sad. And she's making me feel like I've never been wrong. I said, said no. Okay, she said, she said, off of Revolver.
Revolver,
such
again.
A good song.
Yeah.
Amazing song. Again, kind of like In Your Birkenstein, kind of a song that not everybody is that familiar with.
Yeah.
And it has that same jangly,
it does,
kind of crunchy tone that seems like it's very popular with all the listeners.
That's exactly right.
So I forgot to mention that we mentioned how many of the songs got at least one vote.
Yeah.
So we had sort of a select panel of listeners, some of the hardcore listeners, and we asked them for their top Beatles songs. And this song not only, you know, got several votes, but one of those listeners was Mark Neese, and he described this as a slightly twisted pop gem with dark lyrics. You know, I know what it's like to be dead. She's making me feel like I've never been born. That is intense stuff, says Mark.
It is intense stuff.
Definitely is. And you know, it's interesting, Brad, you bought a really cool book that I've heard about, but never actually seen a physical copy of it. It's so big, it comes in its own box, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's a box that's basically made to look like a tape box, a 2-inch tape box. Yeah, it's a great book, and it's a great resource on the Beatles.
It's called Recording the Beatles, and it actually has, it's amazing, if anyone has this book. And I think for a Beatles fanatic, and I know you're a Beatles fanatic and also a recording enthusiast as well.
Right.
It's really fascinating. Yeah. And this song in particular sent my mind straight to some of those pictures I saw at the book, like the technology they use to record.
Yeah.
This song is, it's just incredible how to our minds now primitive it is, you know.
Yeah,
probably
super primitive.
Our little Zoom recorder is like essentially way more advanced than what they actually use to record
it
this on. It's mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, it is.
They had to bounce tracks down, right? And make room for stuff. So to have those drums sound the way they do and the immediacy of it is just, it's just kind of incredible. Also, one other thing I want to note about what you said, Brad, when we were listening to the play out yesterday, was that there are a lot of remastered versions that kind of are out there on the streaming services now. Do you feel like there's a huge amount of difference in those remasters versus some of the old analog stuff?
I do. Like I always feel like I can pick up on it. And it's true. I don't have all the different remasters. I mean, I I know that I have like a complete set of compact discs when they were first released.
I remember that.
Yes, that was a big deal when those came out.
The UK versions, right? Yeah.
Right. And then several years later, mouth not working also, I got like another remastered set, which was great. And then it seems like they keep on doing remasters. Right. Like, you know, they just did the White Album recently.
Remixed and remastered again. Yeah.
So they're out there, and I can't tell you if I've heard them all.
So a remaster is not a remix.
No.
It's not like they did one true remix record, which was the Let It Be Naked, which was
I remember that.
Where they kind of stripped away a lot of the Phil Spector, you know, Wall of Soundish kind of stuff and made it a more, you know, a starker kind of record. I don't know that I've ever really listened to that, but a lot of people prefer it. But most of them are remaster, my understanding doesn't mean that you're like changing any of the parts, but you're sort of optimizing it for whatever sort of like the listening platform is, right?
I feel like that second one that I mentioned is definitely a remix then, because it's clearly different than the first stuff.
Yeah.
But
I don't know.
And how do you feel about that overall? That there's so much remixing and remastering. I mean, it's inevitable with a business, you know, like the Beatles, I understand.
I don't know. I'm on the fence about it. Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of feel like, you know, these guys made the decisions they made, and, you know, they were limited to those decisions because of the equipment that they were dealing with.
That's right.
And I think the music is beautiful because of that. Like, it really is kind of one of the things that kind of contributed to the music they made. They were limited by constraints, yet they were pushing and pushing and pushing.
Right.
And all the staff at EMI were coming up with crazy solutions. And like, these guys like really revolutionized music in the time that they made their music, in that they were just creative beings, and they had a great studio staff that was staffed with like 60 to 80 people. Able to like do what they needed to do, you know, even if it was a little bit cheesy or not cheesy, but just, you know, kind of a hacked solution. But yeah, they did amazing work in there. And yeah, I mean, I think it's cool to go back and remaster it and all, but I appreciate the original stuff just as much.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm on the fence.
I'm kind of with you there.
All right. So I want to move on.
Yeah.
To this song in particular. Mm-hmm. So she said. So yesterday we talked about Norwegian Wood, and we talked about the influence of marijuana on the band. Well, this one takes a step further. This is the influence of LSD.
Without a doubt.
On the band. But again, it's similar in a way that it's not a song. It's certainly not a song like I Want to Hold Your Hand, or that kind of thing where you like listen to a song and you know exactly what they're talking about, right?
Yeah.
This one is, you know, a bit more mysterious and esoteric. Apparently, it was inspired by Peter Fonda.
Yeah.
On an LSD trip, making some comment about knowing what it's like to be dead or something like that. And that inspired John Lennon to write this song. I think it also just sonically has the kind of a feeling of being like on a trip.
Absolutely.
To some extent, right? It sort of stops and starts. It has weird time signature shifts. It goes into like a waltz kind of thing in the middle there. And so it sort of, in the way that you might be in a dream or something like that, and it suddenly taking a turn.
Yeah.
You know, I think it has all that. And I also think it has some of the best Ringo drumming.
Absolutely.
You know, the drumming is definitely a part of this song.
Yeah, it's a great one. Yeah.
Big one. I remember seeing the Feelies cover this song, and, you know, for a long time, they had the drummer and a percussionist, and them doing it with that percussion really accented that Ringo drum part. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Plus the burrowing guitar lines, you know, it's just great out of the box.
Song. Great song.
All right, so should we move on?
Let's do it.
What was that, 12?
12.
Move on to number 11. When you see Bulldog.
Yeah, kind of an interesting one. There are two on this.
There's a part there with barking sounds,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. There's two on this list of 15 that our folks came up with that surprised me, and this is one of them. It's kind of a later period Beatles song that I don't know why suddenly it seems like it's a little more in vogue than it ever
it's
used
really
to be.
Got a resurgency. I think it could be attributed to, I think there's newly discovered footage of them doing the song in the studio.
Oh, is that right?
It's like there's a video circulating out there where it's them doing this live, and it's a pretty cool video.
It feels like a jam session between McCartney and Lennon mostly, and kind of them capturing some of that old spirit of, you know, revved up rock and roll a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and it also kind of, it fits what seems to be the pattern here of the sort of the driving guitars and a Lennon song. I mean, it seems like we've got a pattern going.
Yeah, for what people are appealed to, yeah. The one interesting note I'll take from Ian McDonald's book here is he says, the line "measured out in you" was actually written as "measured out in news." McCartney made the improvement having misread Lennon's handwriting. So he thought it was "measured out in you," which actually ended up being the line. But apparently he wrote "measured out in news."
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So got a couple of comments here from people who contributed to this little poll. Justin Steiner just says, if you're lonely, that great riff will talk to you.
Yeah.
And Mark and Mike Wagner, who's sort of the resident Beatles expert of our listenership.
Yeah.
He says, rockin' song, Paul's bass, Paul's backing vocals, George's guitar solo, and John's vocal, especially during the You Can Talk to Me section. It should be noted how incredible a guitar player George is. Listen to all the different types and styles of George guitar playing throughout the Beatles' career, not to mention his own, and it really is remarkable. He's one of the greatest because he played the song not... He's one of the greatest because of how he played the song, not wanting to show off.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I think you're right. I think Cable Dog has had a bit of a resurgence over the last several years. It's become, I don't know, kind of a favorite of more kind of the Beatles rock listener crowd, you know. And it, again, is one of those songs that maybe the casual listener is not that familiar with.
Right.
But once you hear it, it's kind of like stuck in your head.
Mm-hmm. Very, very catchy. I'll totally agree with that.
Yep.
And ended up coming out, gosh, I don't know what album it even came out on. Did it come out on the Yellow Submarine soundtrack? I think that's what the internet's telling me.
It was, but I remember it. And we talked about this on the old show when we did a episode on sort of like Beatles deep cuts.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe this was one of the songs I played on that. And I remember it because one of my first introductions to Beatles, one of the first, not the first, was I bought two volumes of cassettes that were called Rock and Roll Music.
Okay.
They came out, I want to say, in like the late 70s. I probably got them in like the early 80s at like a secondhand store. But they were specifically, it was like a reissue that was put out specifically of like the harder rocking Beatles songs compiled together. And then this was one of the songs on there. And I remember that it sort of being a standout at that time. So it is one of those songs that, for whatever reason, wasn't necessarily a big deal at the time, but it's definitely grown in stature. I think it's just one of those ones you hear it and you're just like, this is an incredible song.
Yeah. And like, you know, one quick follow-up too on what Brad was saying about EMI and the amazing engineers they had and how that all worked out. It's so curious to me to remember that the Beatles basically had carte blanche to use any studio they wanted for any amount of time. Like they would camp out in there.
Yep.
And nobody else at that time, probably not even the Rolling Stones, you know, unless they were recording on their mobile unit, had that ability to just stay as long as they want, do whatever they want, not worry about a deadline, you know, in any sense of the word.
Yeah.
And now anybody can do that in their basement.
Yeah.
You know, amazing. Essentially.
Exactly.
So. Okay. So we're going to crack into the top 10 here for the playout song, number 10. And kind of like yesterday, we had two rocking songs and one slower song. So it's the same pattern here today. Just how things worked out.
Yeah.
All right. So you're listening to Rock in the Suburbs, and please let us know what you think about the Beatles.
The Beatles.
The Beatles.
I'm sure we can come up with more episodes on this band
probably
down the road. You can call and leave a message,
612-440-1984.
Or you can email us, rock@suburbspod.com, or you can find us on the social medias, all the big social medias, or most of the big ones, all those at Suburbs Pod. Just look for Suburbs Pod. Find that. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Please tell a friend about the show. Do those things, right?
Yeah, that's all you got to do. All right. Tell one friend.
Or more.
Yeah.
I mean, one to
tell
start.
Tell many friends. Well,
yeah. But, you know, everybody's got to know somebody who would like this show, I think, right?
I think this time of the year, you're at a holiday party. There's got to be somebody you're
going to run
into.
Somebody over in the corner's looking a little down.
Yeah. Pick them up.
That's maybe right. You'd like to listen to this podcast.
There bring them a glass of eggnog and a rock in the suburbs. That's right. Cheer them right up.
So do that. Okay. Now, number 10 song is Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Interestingly enough, for me, or maybe not interestingly, I always say it's interesting.
Well, let the listeners be a judge of that.
I'm always saying it's interesting, but probably isn't to half the people that listen to this. I sort of didn't really explore the Beatles very intensely until later, and the man sitting to my right was a big reason for that. I remember when Brad got all those UK reissues and was telling me a lot about the differences between them, and not something I really knew. I knew all kind of the big songs and things. And this one, Sushi and the Banshees, like their cover of it, is kind of where I kind of really yeah. knew the song first.
I forgot about that.
And it wasn't until later I went back and got into the White Album version. I don't know if that's interesting. But
no, that's very interesting.
There you go. All right. It took him a while. He had to think about it. It's just one of those songs that the Beatles could pull off very well, and it being just, I don't mean this in a bad way. I think this word gets used sort of derogatorily now, but it's sort of precious. Do you know what I mean? Like it's very
it is precious.
Yeah. It's
I love the way it builds.
Yeah.
A way. Yeah, it's yeah, I don't know. I can't find the words for it, but it is a great song.
Precious is kind of interesting, yeah. And I think this is one written when the Beatles were in India with the Maharishi. Is that right? Like, I know there was a period where they wrote a lot of songs where they were over there, and perhaps it
yes.
was...
Yes, so Nick Scalera,
yeah.
and we know he does his research on this stuff, right? He wrote, the song evokes exotic imagery of being stuck on an Indian mountaintop with the Maharishi.
There we go.
He also says possibly also Mike Love.
Gosh,
I'm not
hope
sure
he wasn't
about
there.
That.
Yeah, Mike Love was there.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And Mia Farrow and like okay. just a that, bunch right. of people.
Mia Farrow is what all I was right. looking all for. Right. Was it written about her sister or about her, one of the two? That's kind of what I always heard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Then Nick says, but at its base level, it's really about helping someone out of a rut and being a decent person. And also the Beatles learned finger-picking guitar in like 5 minutes and mastered it, as they would.
Yeah, like somebody taught John, I think maybe it was Donovan, who taught him like this one riff, and he ended up writing three songs based on the exact same thing.
Oh, is that right?
This might be one of them.
Oh.
So again, don't have the exact details in my head right now. But
Eric Didrison then chimed in and said, Nick Scalera's write-up is perfect, though I'll add that no one should be stuck on an Indian mountaintop with Mike Love. So there you go. Okay. All right. There you go.
Well said.
That's kind of what I was getting at. All right. So these were great picks. We're into the top 10 now. We just cracked the top 10.
Cracked the top 10.
Dear Prudence.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to listen the rest of the week.
Every day.
To get the rest of those,
yeah,
right?
Every day.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Every day.
Pull us.
All right. And with that, it's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Brad Maitler.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sushi and the Banshees.
Okay.